You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Well, we're going to have some real talk this morning. I've read the book. It's called Running on Empty, and it's about the link between antidepressants and youth suicide. It's a heartbreaking book to read. And the author joins me, and it's Richard Vinnell. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Rodney.
Did I get your surname correctly?
Well, Vinnell, some people say Vinnell, some people say Vernal. Yeah, we're more used to Vernal.
Vernal, yeah. Richard, yeah, Vernal, because yeah. It's V-E-R-N-A-L-L.
That's right, yes.
And you wrote a book called Running on Empty. Tell me how you ended up writing that book.
It's been an evolving process, Rodney. I learned about suicide at an early age. I had very close friends back in the UK, and but around the time of when I was about 10 years old, their father died by suicide, and obviously had very disabling effect on them, and it stuck with me, I guess, and I've sort of over the years, certainly in the last 35 years in working with people, I've worked with a lot of people that are having suicide thoughts, suffering from suicide ideation. And so I guess where the book really started from was when I, back in 1987.
Just before you do that, we'll go back to 1987 one second. What is the concept of suicide ideation? I don't know what that means.
Right, okay. Well, basically it's people having thoughts about ending their lives, basically.
Okay.
So
the idea.
So either self harm, doing self harm to themselves or ending their lives. Life's become too difficult.
Take us back to 1987.
So in 1987, I joined West Auckland IHC. And I came to New Zealand back in the late 70s and was in agriculture for a number of years. But I due to a back injury myself, I had to give up dairy farming. And in 1987, I worked with a group of people that were coming out of institutions at the time. It was a time of so-called normalization. And the institutions like Carrington Hospital in Kingsseat in Auckland were being closed down and people were being returned to the community. And I was working with a group of people at Carrington Polytechnic in those days, providing horticultural skills to people. And it was a very interesting time, great learning period for me. And one of the people that I was working with was a young man who had been diagnosed as a schizophrenic. He had a dual disability, or he had cerebral palsy. And Peter, I worked with him quite closely, and I became his advocate later on. And within a few months, every time his medication was changed, his mood would fluctuate, and he talked quite intimately about the issues of taking antidepressants, which he found was he didn't enjoy, and his mood fluctuated greatly when he was on these antidepressants, and he was went through several types of different antidepressants during the time I worked with him. And none of them seemed to be effective for him. He seemed more stable when he was off the antidepressants than when he was on them. So that was the catalyst for me to become interested in the subject of, or seeing whether there was some form of connection between suicide and the use of antidepressants.
And then, as I'm fond of saying, it's 87.
And then, okay, well, time moved on, and I went to, in 1996, by that stage, I had set up the first independent supported employment agency for people with learning difficulties at the three polytechnics in Auckland. And I went to a seminar at the Sheraton Hotel, and it was at the time that new antidepressant, the SSRIs, had just come onto the market. And there was a seminar. It was the title of the workshop that I went from was from Powerlessness to Power, and there were people, psychiatrists from America that had come over and been invited over to talk at this seminar. And basically, the whole 2 days, it was a 2 day seminar, and they were actually promoting these SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the new drugs on the market at the time, to reduce the incidence of depression and anxiety and other mental health conditions. And every time a consumer got up to speak and say, well, I've been taking psychotropic medicine for some time and haven't found it beneficial, I'm getting much better results from exercise, diet, and one or two other things, massage. That was totally ignored by these learned gentlemen that were promoting these new antidepressants. And I walked away from that workshop feeling very dissatisfied. It just reinforced my questioning as to what was going on, basically.
Indeed, because I guess you'd realize that companies can't make money out of diet, exercise, and massage.
Exactly.
But if they have a Pinkerton pill that you take every day, they can make a lot of money.
Definitely. Yeah.
$1 billion they can make. Money that is beyond imagining.
Right.
And then?
And time went by, and I went to another workshop in 2013 at the Bruce Mason Theatre, and it was an Australian organisation that had come over, an organisation called Generation Zero, and they were actually promoting meditation and mindfulness programs in schools in Australia, and it was a very interesting seminar. And at the end of the seminar, I went up to the co-founder and spoke to him and talked about some of the research that I've been gathering over a number of years. And he suggested that I send some information through to him at a later date, put it into an article for him. I never got round to sending the information, but again, that was the start of me. Instead of sending the information, I started to sit down and put my information together to format the book that I've written.
And the shocking thing is the level at which young people in New Zealand are taking, what is it, antidepressants? We're the third highest in the world?
Very much so. I mean, it's, well, when you say third highest, I mean, in 2002, New Zealand had the third highest rate of Ritalin use in the world, behind America and Canada. And at that time, they had higher rates of suicide and lower academic achievement and a growing incidence of violence in young people.
And as you say in your book, it's not indicative that these drugs work when you don't see the result.
Right, right.
Is Ritalin an antidepressant?
Ritalin's used for ADHD, so it's a mood stabilizer rather than antidepressant. You've got your antidepressants, mood stabilizers, and antipsychotic medications.
And these are all drugs on prescription?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And so a child can be taken to see their local GP, and the GP could prescribe a mood stabilizer, an antidepressant, whatever, just like that.
That's right. Unfortunately, you know, in 2016, there was a big move. The government actually moved most of the prescriptions from qualified psychiatrists that have the training with these highly toxic drugs to the primary care level in the health system. So GPs were actually, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, there was a survey in 2016, and 75% doctors said they weren't qualified to work with people diagnosed with mental health issues, and only 16% felt comfortable in working with this group of people.
Well, they'd have no training in it.
Exactly. That's right. And even today, there's been very little change from that time in terms of the training GPs have received to work with these drugs. I mean, they're largely influenced by pharmaceutical reps that go around and say, look, we've now got a drug that's going to meet the needs of patients you're working with.
And of course, it's gone through MedSafe, gone through the process, the medical establishment give it the tick, and a GP feels safe to prescribe it. Quite possibly sees a perverse risk that if they don't prescribe it and harm befalls the child, they could be seen in some way culpable. So on their risk-benefit calculation, would there be a tendency to prescribe rather than do nothing?
Well, that's it. We live in an age now where, you know, there's a pill for every disease now, you know, where,
yes.
And as I say, I mean, the emphasis is on, GPs to do something, to be seen to be doing something.
Yes. If you go to the GP and you don't come out with a prescription to make you better, you feel cheated from the visit and the money you've spent, because you go there to get well.
Right, yes.
I was reading your book. I'm talking, you're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney High. I'm talking to Richard Vernell. And I was reading his book, Running on Empty. And my 13-year-old daughter, who's just started high school, said to me, "Oh, what's the book about, Dad?" And I said, "Oh, it's pretty disturbing. It's about antidepressants and youth suicide." So, yeah. She says, "Heaps of kids at school are on antidepressants." I was blown away by that. And she says, "It's stranger than that. They have therapists and get told what to do." And she said, "It's like a thing." I could not believe that statement. And she says, heaps. It could be three or four, right? I don't know. I didn't press her on it. But she's a keen observer of her fellow human beings. Does that surprise you that a 13-year-old girl would say that?
I guess, you know, as I say, you know, the antidepressants have been around for so long now and they're seen as a wonder drug. You know, we bought in the promotion, the lobby groups have done a very effective process of, you know, the governments have bought into this flawed ideology that antidepressants are the drug of the day, basically. They're a cheap fix which aren't addressing the underlying issues, basically. You know,
you said in your book that there are 5-year-olds in New Zealand on antidepressants.
Well, at one stage, three-year-olds have been placed on antidepressants.
It's impossible.
Well, one would have thought so. One really would have thought so. But
I mean, that statement alone demands a massive inquiry into what the hell is going on.
Hmm.
Because some parent has taken their 3-year-old to the doctor and the so-called professional has diagnosed the 3-year-old as depressed, written a prescription for an antidepressant, and put a toddler on it. I mean, I'm just speechless at these. I'm in danger of using a bad word. I'm speechless when I read that. It's just like scandalous.
Yes, it's. I mean, I've you know, over the years of putting this book together, I've gone through various emotions, you know, and disbelief and anger has been, you know, paramount to some of those emotions that I felt. I felt that, you know, we really do almost live in an Alice in Wonderland syndrome now, where, you know, it's just as accepted. But I mean, the fact is these drugs were never designed for children. They've been prescribed these drugs off label. So there've been no safety studies done for children and young adolescents. And
how do you mean? What does it mean? Sorry, Richard. What does it mean that they've been prescribed off label? The label says you should only use these for adults.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the MedSafe fact sheets, all the drugs, bar one, sertraline, should be given. That's an antidepressant. There are 6 or 7 antidepressants that are given, a range of antidepressants. But there's only one antidepressant that should be prescribed to any child anyone under the age of 18. The majority of these antidepressants aren't recommended for use under the age of 18.
And yet here we are, doctors, pharmacists, giving kiddies, including 13-year-olds who are kiddies, drugs off-label. You described antidepressants as toxic. What do you mean by that?
Well, they're highly toxic medications. If you look at, I'll just give you an indication of what I mean by that. I'll give you a rundown of some of the ingredients are actually in the most commonly used antidepressant in New Zealand currently. Yeah, one of the things that is, you've got, and with any medication, you've got active ingredients and inactive ingredients. Now, one of the active ingredients of fluoxetine is fluoxetine hydrochloride, which is a salt that's put in into the into the tablet. And there's now a growing recognition of salt addiction. People get addicted to salt, and that's why it's so difficult to come off these products. So that's one of the one of the products. But more importantly, the research now states that the inactive ingredients in pharmaceutical products have the potential to cause adverse reactions. And Robert Osterberg, a pharmaceutical industry consultant and member of working committee on excipients and active ingredients, says, like active ingredients, excipients are selected because of their distinct chemical or physical properties, and the consequences of defective ones can be dire. 20 years ago, there wasn't much discussion around excipients, Osterberg says. Now I'm seeing a lot of activity from the International Pharmaceutical Excipients Council Federation, and they work closely with the FDA to make these components a central part of the conversation. Now, these are some of the products that are actually in the capsule that people are taking. Ethanol is commonly used as an excipient in the manufacture of medicines. Newborns, infants, and children are not able to metabolize ethanol as efficiently as adults. As a consequence, they may be at higher risk of both acute and chronic alcohol-related toxicities. Ingesting ethanol can cause mood changes, slower reaction time, uncoordinated movements, slurred speech, and nausea. Higher exposure may cause blurred vision, confusion, disorientation, movement problems, vomiting, and sweating. Potassium, I'm just going to give you a summary of these excipients, Rodney. Potassium hydroxide is on the special hazard substance list. Exposure to this chemical can cause headaches, dizziness, nausea, and vomiting. Propylene glycol, reported adverse effects from propylene glycol include central nervous system toxicity, cardiac arrhythmia, seizures, agitation, and a risk of toxicity includes infants. And oxide black is another excipient that's used, and there's concern about possible genotoxicity of iron oxides. Any route or exposure should be considered as hazardous. Adverse reactions include lower back pain, vomiting, diarrhea, flushing, dizziness, and muscle spasm. So those are just a few examples of some of the ingredients that are in these, in the capsule of these medications, these antidepressants.
The GP must know that.
One would like to think so, but, you know, pharmacist, GPs these days.
The pharmacist must know that.
Sorry?
The pharmacist must know that.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I bet they don't tell the parent.
No.
Tell me, Richard, do we know how many young people are taking antidepressants?
Well, it's a very good question. As I say, I mentioned in the book that between 2007 there was a study done looking at the prescription of antidepressants to young people from the age of 3 through to 18, and there've been an increase in prescriptions of 46% between 2016. However, recently I've come across some data from Te Whatu Ora, Ministry of Health, and they've on prescription counts that have actually written now. Whether it's a written prescription, so whether people are actually going to the chemist and getting the prescription or not is questionable. But one of the most disturbing things is for the age group 10 to 19, between 2010 and 2020, there had been a 300% increase in the amount of prescription counts made for that group. A 300% increase.
Do we know the total number?
Yeah. In 2010, for the 10 to 19 age group, it was approximately 40,000. And in 2020, that had gone up to 160,000. So from 40,000 to 160,000 prescription counts have been made in that 10-year period.
That's the increase. So that means, if I got the number right, that there are 160,000 prescriptions for antidepressants written for kids. What was that? Between what ages?
Between the ages of 10 and 19 during that time period.
I'm just processing this, Richard. I'm sorry. 120,000 prescriptions.
No, 160,000.
160,000, yeah, sorry. Yeah. And presumably, if a child is on the drug for the year, they would get multiple prescriptions for that year, would they not?
One would assume so, yeah.
But let's say you get a 2-month supply, divide it by six. You said 160, it's like 28,000, whatever. Can't do the sum quickly in my head with a cold.
Right.
28,000, 30,000 kids rising at a phenomenal rate of basically school children as young as 10, and we know as young as 3, on an antidepressant. I read a shocking book. It would have been 2012. It was a huge book. A big effort to read. Can't remember the title, can't remember the author. But this gentleman, Englishman, very highly qualified doctor, had worked in his career on drug trials, pharmaceutical companies, and walked out and with this book blew the whistle. And the idea was that these companies that he worked for, their goal was to make a billion-dollar pill. That was to hit the jackpot. And they'd get a pill, and he said they'd do massive trials, 50,000 people since the thalidomide, they had to do randomized controlled trials. And you think, oh, that's great. So you give 25,000 people the pill and 25,000 get a placebo and you look at the results. But he says they comb the results looking for the smallest statistical improvement in some feature. And he said the easiest results to see is a shift in mood. And it can be so small, and then it's quoted up as statistical, and the scientists write it up. And the trials that he described only run for 6 weeks. And he said, if you ran tobacco and alcohol through those trials, they'd be the greatest drugs ever known. Excuse me. They'd be the greatest drugs ever known. Because in the 6 weeks, all you get is, oh, they felt a bit happier. Way we go. And then he said they never looked for the adverse effects. And this is how billion-dollar drugs are made. And here we are dosing our kids at a horrific rate. I can't believe it, Richard.
Mm. Well, you're absolutely right about a number of things there, Rodney. I mean, the fact is that, you know, most of these trials conducted on the efficacy of antidepressants are done with adults over the age of 25. So they completely exclude, there are very few trials that have been done. There was a great hooing and haring in 2018. The Guardian came out with a statement in Britain saying antidepressants do work. End of story. You know, people that say they don't work, they do work. Well, the author and the author, when you actually went into the actual, you read the actual study, the newspaper was full of contradictory information. The fact was that the study was done on people with an average age group of 44 years of age, and it was done over an eight-week period with people with severe depression, but there were no long-term studies done, you know. And the fact is that, you know, people, even people that are pro-antidepressants, say it takes at least 4 to 6 weeks for these antidepressants to start to kick in before you get any result with them. And another fact is that the industry knows that for a third of people, you know, antidepressants are totally ineffective. That's a well-known fact. So in 2022, Rodney, there was something like 670,000 New Zealanders on antidepressants in this country.
So say that number again.
670,000 New Zealanders taking antidepressants in 2000. That's that's just antidepressants. And that doesn't take antipsychotic medication. Sorry?
What year was that?
That's 2022.
So there's 5 million people.
One in seven, basically one in seven, one in eight people is taking an antidepressant.
That's a lot of money. And the trick with an antidepressant is you don't take the pill and get better and therefore no longer need it.
It can be a lifetime sentence. You know, people, you know, a lot of people are on them for, you know, indefinitely, basically, because when it's so hard to come off them, the symptoms, the withdrawal symptoms are quite horrific for people.
They are addictive.
Some people, yeah.
They are addictive.
Oh, very much so, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
The amount of evil in the world by people that we should respect is shocking to me, because you go along to your doctor and you think they genuinely want you to get well. But to do that to kids.
I do think, you know, I mean, doctors are in a hard place, you know. I mean, we both grew up at a time when your family GP would come into the house, get to know the family and everything.
Yes.
Nowadays, you know, with the stress on in the community and everything else, you know, they virtually, you know, their lives are have become, and that's why, you know, the system's in such disarray, because, I mean, doctors are so stretched these days, you know, 15, 20 minutes and they're on to the next patient. So I'm not sure whether I would say, there's certainly, you know, within the system, I mean, denial is a huge thing. There's a big issue around denial, you know, and certainly within the powers that be. You know, but I think
what would you say? What would you say to a listener now who's on antidepressants?
Well, I would say, you know, I mean, without, obviously, I mean, it's that's a different that's a big question.
Carefully into this.
Sorry.
You'd certainly suggest they look carefully at what they're taking and why.
Yeah, look carefully, and the thing is, that, you know, For a long time now, there's been quite conclusive studies that actually say that there are alternative treatments, and they're doing some wonderful stuff down in Canterbury University. Professor Julia Rutledge at Canterbury University has been working with high levels of micronutrients for over 2024. For the last 15 years, they've got, Canterbury University have produced at least 20, be more than that now, but over 20 studies, clearly showing the benefits of micronutrients on mental health. At the time of the Christchurch earthquake, Canterbury University did a study with a cohort of people, and the people that were actually on taking high levels of micronutrients did far better than the people that weren't on micronutrients.
Wow, with the stress. And of course, this is at a time when our food has oftentimes been stripped of micronutrients.
Right, yes.
Let's go on to that taboo subject in New Zealand, which you say needs to be more talked about. And here we are on Real Talk, so we're going to talk about it. And that taboo subject is suicide, and particularly youth suicide. It's not discussed, is it?
No, it's still a subject, that if you do mention it in a number of areas, there's a, uncomfortable silence. I mean, the government would say that they're doing more. There's been more open debate about suicide since in the last 6 or 7 years. But the data that's, as I say, basically the data doesn't say that there's been any evidence of any significant improvement. I mean, one of the things that came out of the government's inquiry into mental health, Rodney stated, one of the key points that came out of the inquiry into mental health and addiction services back in 2017, the author stated, if our treatments work, shouldn't we have fewer people presenting in crisis, fewer people on the disability benefit due to mental illness, a reduction in community measures of psychological distress, and a decrease in suicide rate, despite access to costly biomedical treatment, something central to recovery appears to be missing in the social fabric of developed countries. And basically, in the Western world, where antidepressants are used, they're the pill of the time, basically. Additional points that came out were the estimated reduction in life expectancy of people with severe mental health or addiction challenges is up to 25 years, and the number of prescriptions for mental health-related medications increased by 50%. In the last 10 years and continues to grow by about 5% each year. Well, it's actually, it's higher than that. And while the government inquiry into mental health has been welcomed and greeted favourably within the mental health sector, the inquiry comes with a warning. The authors state New Zealand needs to stop talking about the need for a continuum of services to address mental health and addiction needs across the spectrum and make action a priority. Well, that really, when you look at what's happened, there have been one of two changes in the last 6 or 7 years, but it's been very limited and very slow. I listened to a couple of podcasts from the Ministry of Health in 2021, I think it was, and they were talking about a 5 to 10 year plan. Well, this discussion should be about what are we doing now to address the high rates of suicide, because the fact is, Rodney, suicide rates haven't come down at all in the last 20 years. They're as high now as they were 20 years ago, and during that time, the rates of anti depressants have gone up and up and up.
What are our suicide statistics?
Sorry? Well, in 2019, the provisional suicide statistics are only that. They're only provisional. And so the coroner's chief coroner comes out with provisional suicide statistics between August and October most years. But it can take actually 5 years for them to actually come out with the actual confirmed rates of suicide for a specific year. For example, the last year of confirmed suicides was in 2019, and that figure was 673 suicides. So that was equating to two people in New Zealand dying by suicide each day, basically, taking their lives each day. And
is that higher than our road top?
Sorry?
Is that higher than our road
top? Oh, yes, yeah, no, definitely, definitely higher, yeah, yeah.
Well, you think of all that we do about the road toll, and what's the youth suicide rate? How many youths?
The youth suicide rate has, they didn't specifically go into the criteria that they actually measure data now has changed in the last few years. But just coming back to that figure of 673 suicides, it was at the rate of 13.1 suicides per 100,000. And that was as high as in the late 90s when suicides were at an all-time high in New Zealand. So, you know, there's been no significant increase. And there's been an acknowledgement from the Suicide Prevention Office. The slight fluctuations from year to year, but they've said that the data states that there's really been no significant change in suicide rates over the past decade.
And we don't know from that data how many young people are killing themselves.
Well, it's yeah, I mean, generally, well, and one has to be careful, but it's, the age group from 15 to 24 are generally making up either a quarter or a fifth of the national suicide figures.
Wow. A quarter of 670. Gosh, you're challenging me on my numbers. 150, that's 170. And you think that there is a link, causal or otherwise, we'll get to that, between taking antidepressants and suicide?
Well, I mean, there's a correlation there. I mean, it's been well known. I mean, on the fact sheets, you know, the MedSafe fact sheets, yeah, it states quite clearly that, you know, the warning of on the fact sheets say, you know, one of the adverse reactions to suicide is suicide. Sorry, one of the adverse reactions to antidepressants is suicide ideation, either self-harm or people making attempts on their lives.
That's an adverse event of having an antidepressant. I thought it was supposed to stop that.
Well, exactly.
That's saying,
yes.
I don't know, take a COVID vaccine and one of the adverse effects is that you'll get COVID. I mean, that doesn't make sense. I can understand there being a correlation because people that are very depressed and thinking suicidal thoughts might take antidepressants. And so you can imagine amongst the cohort that take antidepressants, there's a higher observation of suicides. But when they note it as an adverse offence, that suggests a causality. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my dizzy aunt.
I'll just give you some more information, Rodney. I know it's pretty depressing information, but Professor John Reed, who was the head of the Faculty of Psychology at Auckland University for a number of years, he's been a leading proponent of, you know, cognitive behaviour therapy or other treatments, rather than antidepressants for a long, long time. And in 2022, he's now at the University of East London. And the University of East London put out a study in 2022 looking at a correlation between suicide and antidepressants between 2003 and 2020 in the UK. And they examined 8,000 coroner's inquest reports and found that antidepressants were linked to 2,718 cases of hanging, 933 overdose deaths. It also found that the use of drugs were associated with another 979 suicides caused by things such as jumping off, falling to their deaths, drowning, shooting themselves, or being involved in a fire or electrocution. John Reed stated, "If preventing suicide is a primary reason for prescribing antidepressants, the data set includes several thousand people for whom the drugs clearly did not work. Not only do antidepressants not reduce suicidality, but they also actually increase for many. And for many, they provide the mechanism for killing oneself." So that was a report that came out in 2022, but it wasn't covered by the mainstream media.
Well, I would normally hesitate to say this, but we know where their advertising dollars come from and stuff like that. Richard, if you could wave a magic wand, and we have for the first time ever a Minister of Mental Health, Matt Dookie, if you were him, what would you be recommending to our government to be doing?
And that's a very good question. I mean, in opposition, he was quite outspoken in his concerns over the increase of the increase in the prescription of antidepressants to youth, and so I've actually composed a letter to him. I haven't sent it as of yet, but it is something that I intend to do in the next couple of weeks with some of the data that we're talking about here. I think, you know, there's clearly UNICEF have come out and said they've raised the fact that New Zealand has one of the highest rates, if not the highest rate, of antidepressant prescribing to youth in the world currently. And the fact is that there are safe, effective alternative treatments out there in reducing suicide ideation. I mean, I've already mentioned basically micronutrients and the work that Canterbury University are doing on the use of micronutrients. But there's also the impact of meditation and mindfulness programs is extremely effective in stabilizing people's behavior, and massage and mentoring are also, I talk about the four M's: micronutrients, meditation, massage, and mentoring. And interestingly, there was Bikram Patel, the co-founder of the London Global Health Centre for Mental Health, in an introduction to a BBC radio programme, "What Can We Do About the World's Mental Health Programme?" in 2019, stated, "The honest truth right now is we don't have a clear way of being able to distinguish those individuals who have a mental problem from those that are otherwise well." So, again, you have to think, did I read that right? That he came out, and I thought it was quite a courageous statement to come out and say, you know, but there have been people down through, you know, the last decade, you know, there have been a number of experts and whistleblowers that have all been saying, what are we doing? I mean, Ronald Pice, editor-in-chief of the US Psychiatric Times, stated in 2011, in truth, the chemical imbalance notion that is the basis for the prescribing of antidepressants was always a kind of urban legend, never a theory seriously pronounced by well-informed psychiatrists. The United Nations in 2017 said the over-reliance on biomedical interventions causes more harm than good, undermines the right to health, and must be abandoned. And the World Health Authority in the same year said antidepressants should not be used for treating depression in children and are not the first line of treatment in adolescents, among whom they should be used with caution. So all these international bodies have been saying this for a long, long time. But there's such a, it's gone into the psyche of government. And the thing is, Rodney, antidepressants are seen as a quick fix. They're not dealing with the real issues behind suicide ideation, the social issues like unemployment, the lack of development in provincial New Zealand, the infrastructure that is going to be able to provide opportunities for young people, the lack of educational opportunities.
When you see what's being taught in schools with my kids, it's depressing stuff. And they're not getting character built. You know how we went to school and you developed your character and your fortitude and your resilience. That's not happening. Right. It's all victims and gender and race and climate change. Oh. We're talking on Radley Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We've been talking to Richard Vernell. He's written a book called Running on Empty, on antidepressants and youth suicide. Where can we buy that book from, Richard?
The book's available on Amazon as an ebook and through the Copy Press in Nelson.
Great.
Yeah.
Copy Press in Nelson or Amazon as an ebook.
Yeah.
Richard, would you mind coming back on our show when you receive your response from the Minister of Mental Health to your letter, Matt Ducey? And we'll go through it with you.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'd be more than happy to do that.
There you go. Send us a text, please, 2057. Email us at rallycheck.radio. Shocking statistics, shocking waste, shocking loss, shocking amount of misery being caused. And take a pill. You're on Real Talk with Rodney Hyde, rallycheck.radio.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.